What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Show. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, your vaxxed Ronin, variants, you know, Neo in the Matrix, you know, the whole deal at this point. Joined as always by producer Justin Michael F. Florio, which Florio, I don't know if we've talked since the whole thumbs down thing. Javi Baez, but I think it's Frankie Lindor now, are giving thumbs down to Mets fans. As somebody who doesn't have a stake in it, I am amused. You are a Mets fan. I would imagine you don't feel quite as amused by this thing.
Part of me, like, I'm not a fan who likes to boo my own team's players. So I understand that the players are like, hey, we don't like getting booed by our home crowd. It doesn't make us play better. But at the same time, you cannot boo the fans back. Like, they pay to watch you play. You have been in the worst stretch of the season. And especially Javi Baez. Like, Javi Baez came here like 2 weeks ago. They've done nothing but lose. And he's a free agent at the end of the year. That's really going to make the Mets want to retain you. I don't get it.
it's amusing. You know, and I also think it's funny, especially you talk about Javi Baez. He's been there for 2 weeks. Like, a lot of those fans have been there for life. Like, they have been through a lot of pain. You know, so like, your little thumbs down thing is not going to really deter them. But you know, good luck.
Leave it to the Mets to always be the story, even when they've fallen out of the race.
Right? Like, it's so funny. At the beginning of the year, they were so good. People were like, "Well, maybe they've turned it around." And now they've gone back to being the Mets, and now there's comedy.
Now they're booing their own fans. That's how far they've fallen.
That is entertaining. All right. This is not a baseball podcast, obviously. So we got plenty of football stuff to talk about. We'll give you our all preseason hype teams. We're going to give you our guys that we feel like we need to leave every single draft with. And we're going to give away the Madden codes. I know that we talked about that on the last show. So we got a few submissions. We'll read a couple of the ones we like. And we will announce who our Madden code winners are going to be. But first, we got some news headlines, including an eye-opener from this morning. And for me, it was literally an eye-opener. I woke up, I rolled over as I am wont to do. I grabbed my phone, I opened up Twitter. It is a terrible habit. You shouldn't do it, kids, but I am addicted to it. Do as I say, not as I do in this situation. The first thing I see is a tweet from Tom Pelissero saying that the Patriots have cut Cam Newton. He is no longer a New England Patriot. Obviously, that means Mac Jones is now your starter in New England. Certainly, this one caught everybody by surprise. The subsequent reports have been that some of it has to do with Mac playing so well in the preseason. Some of it has to do with Cam not being vaccinated, already having missed time, and the fear that they could be without him at some point, or maybe even have to forfeit games if an outbreak were to occur. That is a whole different set of circumstances that really has nothing to do with your fantasy team. What does have to do with your fantasy team, though, Florio, is Mac Jones now being the starter. And are you interested in drafting him at all? And if so, where?
I think Mac Jones is better for the pieces around him, but I think that Cam Newton would have been the more useful fantasy piece if he was the starting quarterback, if that makes sense. I think Cam, what he did last year, the 12 rushing touchdowns, he had the third most rushing yards, that adds points with his legs, which is very valuable in fantasy. Mac Jones is not that style of quarterback. He is not going to run. Like, he can move around a little bit more than I think he gets credit for, but he is not going to add a whole lot of rushing yards with his legs. So for me, for fantasy, I understand why the Patriots would be excited. He's looked really good in preseason. I think he could be Bill Belichick's, like, new Tom Brady. I say that in quotes, not saying he's going to become the GOAT and win 7 chips, but he could operate a similar style of offense. But with that being said, for fantasy, I think that he is purely just like a low-end QB2. I would rather have, I'm going to say our boy now, Marcus, Sam Darnold. I would rather have Jameis Winston, who you know we love on this podcast. And I think Mac Jones, for me, slides in right around where I had Zach Wilson, which means in a one QB league, I'm not going after him.
So, okay, so now, obviously, in the AFC East, Josh Allen is now your dean of quarterbacks, right? Which, I mean, you know, he's not that old, but he is the longest tenured starter in the AFC East. You've got Tua, Zach Wilson, and Mac Jones as your other three. So you basically just said you're putting Zach Wilson ahead of Mac Jones. Where does Tua fall in that group for you?
I like Tua a good amount. Like, for me, Tua is a high-end QB2. And what I've been doing a lot this draft season, Marcus, is if I miss out on the elite quarterbacks, the top six, you know, the ones that are great with their arms and legs, then I will take, you know, either a Ryan Tannehill, a Matt Stafford, a Trevor Lawrence, Jalen Hurts, someone like that. And I like to pair them with a QB2 with a lot of upside. And my targets right now tend to be Tua, Justin Fields, or Trey Lance is that second quarterback that really could push you over the top. Because to me, I don't really see the point, you know, especially in like a one quarterback league, of drafting like a Big Ben or a Matt Ryan or a Derek Carr as a backup. Like, yes, they're safe and they're kind of stable. But if I'm taking a second quarterback, I want it as someone that has the upside of being a QB1. And I think Tua, with the pieces around him and being healthy now from this hip injury, I think that he fits that mold.
Yeah, I have been a fan of Tua this offseason. And, you know, I know there are a lot of people out there that feel like he's just kind of meh, that after what they saw last year, just feel like he's not the guy. I'm willing to give him a shot, you know, after the injury. Now with the, as you mentioned, the other weapons that they've got there, I sort of like Tua this year, and I don't mind having him as a second quarterback. And this is weird. This is a year that I'm drafting second quarterbacks. The last few years, I have not drafted a second quarterback, you know, in one QB leagues. But this year I'm doing it, and I'm getting some of those upside guys that you talked about. You also talked about how this move makes you a little more excited about their pass catchers. Does this mean you're more in on, you know, say a Jakobi Meyers or somebody like that now?
It's interesting, because the one thing that Cam Newton was doing in preseason was just locking in on Jakobi Meyers and throwing to him wherever he is on the field. So I think he actually is the one Patriots pass catcher that this doesn't really boost a whole bunch. Not saying it lowers him either, but I think he kind of stays status quo. Whereas I really think this is a huge plus for the running backs, especially like someone like James White in the passing game, because Cam Newton, Marcus, we know it, when he felt the pressure, he would tuck and run, whereas Mac Jones is going to look to scramble and just find the closest target, and that's more often than not going to be James White. I also think this really helps Jonnu Smith, who is someone that I've been excited about, because we hear it a lot, right? Like, a rookie quarterback's best friend is their tight end, just that safe target over the middle, and I think Jonnu Smith could provide that, especially in the red zone. I think that he has a really good chance of leading this team in touchdowns, so of all the Patriots pass catchers, he's actually the one that I am most interested in for fantasy, mostly because he's a tight end.
Yeah, I've started to get on board Jonnu Smith train. Like, I was wavering back and forth, and people would ask me who I liked better between Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith, and I would tell you, like, you know, depends sort of on the day. But watching a little bit of the Patriots so far in the preseason, it is interesting to see how they've used Jonnu, how they're scheming to get him open, how they're just trying to get him the ball, and basically just trying to get him in space and let him use his athleticism to sort of make plays happen. So that sort of gives me a little bit more confidence that if I'm going to take a shot at one of those two tight ends, it's going to be Jonnu. I think Hunter Henry will be fine. I just feel like, you know, Jonnu Smith has a little more versatility in how they can use him in that offense. That's sort of what I like there. Now that Cam is gone, and you mentioned the 12 rushing touchdowns he had last year that led the team, where do all the rushing scores come from? I mean, does it fall to Damian Harris? Does Ramondre Stevenson really become LeGarrette Blount 2.0? I mean, where does this all go now?
My guess is it goes to Damian Harris, but Stevenson is also a huge factor there as well. The guy is built like a bull, and we saw him in the preseason. He can punch it in with the best of them. So Damian Harris last year struggled. I know he only had 4 attempts inside the 5-yard line, but he struggled to turn those into touchdowns. And I think if he struggles early on this year, then we could see them pivot to Stevenson. You can never discount what Bill Belichick is going to do with his running backs, but this is obviously a huge plus for all of them who can get those goal line touches, because last year Cam Newton had more touches inside the 5-yard line, more carries, I should say, than all of the Patriots running backs combined. So he was actually, I believe, top 5 in total carries inside the 5-yard line last year. That was just what they would do. And I'm someone, Marcus, I said it last week on the podcast, that even if he didn't get the starting job, I thought he could have came in off the bench when they got near the goal line, similar to a Jacoby Brissett or Taysom Hill. But now that's all alleviated, we know it's going to be Mac Jones' job, and the running backs are likely going to get those touches inside the 5-yard line. So I think you have to feel better today about both Harris and Stevenson than you did yesterday.
Yeah, I think so. You know, interesting to note that between Cam being gone, Sony Michel being gone, and look, I know Sony Michel wasn't necessarily a huge factor, but that is 13 of the team's 20 rushing touchdowns from last year that are no longer in the building. I mean, that's a pretty significant number. Now, granted, you know, 12 of those belong to Cam, one belonged to Sony Michel. It's sort of like the fact that you know, Hank Aaron and his brother combined for like 758 home runs. You know, whatever the number is, with most of them coming from Hank.
Sony Michel is the dude in the group project who just shows up on the last day and gets the grade. That's it.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So, but yeah, I think that does open up a lot of opportunity for those running backs. I was starting to really get more excited about Damian Harris too, and I think your point is valid that this means potentially more opportunities for him down near the goal line. Of course, now that I say that, it's going to be the Ramondre Stevenson show. I just know that. Other running back news, this one of the more unfortunate variety, we saw over the weekend, and it was confirmed earlier this week, J.K. Dobbins is going to be out for the season with a torn ACL. He took a helmet to the knee on Saturday against Washington. Just unfortunate for him. I know that, you know, he was hoping for big things. The Ravens were hoping for big things, and certainly we hope he's going to be back soon and healthy and ready to go for next year. I had made no secret of the fact that I was on the Gus Edwards bus, right? I was enjoying paying a low fare on the Gus bus. I thought he was going to have a big role in this offense, regardless of Dobbins' status. And so that's who I was tending to draft. Obviously, the discount is now gone with Gus Edwards looking like the starter and the guy who takes over the lion's share of the opportunities there. So now, knowing this, how high do we have to reach, you think, to get Gus Edwards?
Probably higher than I am willing to do. I think that he is, I have him as my RB19 right now, and I've seen some people say RB15. Some even say his ceiling is higher. I have a hard time saying that his ceiling is too much higher than like RB15 or so, because he's not going to catch a whole bunch of passes. It's the same concerns that we had with J.K. Dobbins. And I had Dobbins around RB17, 18. I think Gus Edwards, listen, Marcus, I was with you. I was on the Gus bus getting him in like the 9th, 10th round. So all of the shares I already have of him that I've drafted at that discount, I'm satisfied having him at that price. But when he starts going in like the third or fourth round here, to me, I feel like you're getting closer to his ceiling. There's still the same concerns that with the pass catching. We know Lamar is still going to take a lot of the rushing work for himself. Plus, there's going to be a second back involved. Right now, they're saying Tyson Williams is that guy, but I also would not be surprised if we're starting to see a lot of cuts. There's still some big name veterans out there who haven't gotten signed yet this offseason. I would not be surprised if Baltimore brought in another back. But for me, I think you're pushing Gus Edwards closer to his ceiling now. So I'm still just going to be taking RBs early. And in the third or fourth round, I'll be taking either one of the elite tight ends or I'll be getting my receivers at that point.
Yeah, third round feels very early for me. And like I said, I like Gus. And look, John Harbaugh made no bones about it when asked. He said, look, we're going to run multiple backs. He's like, we want to have two or three guys back there. And I don't even know if he was including Lamar Jackson, right? Because if you have three running backs and Lamar Jackson, then that's going to be really frustrating. So I do think we're going to see somebody else step in there. I don't know if it's Williams. Justice Hill, I think, is still on the roster as of now. So he's another guy that is a candidate to take some of those carries. Third round feels really early for Gus. If I can get him in the fifth, I'm okay. I mean, is fifth round a little bit better for you?
Yeah, fifth would be okay for me, especially if he's then my RB3. Like, let's say I have two running backs, two receivers, and I'm like, I'm all right. I'm cool taking the upside shot there on the Ravens lead back. But I think if I've seen him go anywhere from 3, 4, 5, the later the better for me. And the later the better the chances of me getting him are. But I've seen him go ahead of like Josh Jacobs. And as much as I've been off of Josh Jacobs, I can't take Gus Edwards over Josh Jacobs.
Yeah, that one seems that's a little spicy for me. And you're right. I have not been on Josh Jacobs at all. I think I drafted him maybe in one or two spots, but I don't know that I could let him go after Gus Edwards and feel good about it. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting though, because the Ravens are still going to be one of the run heaviest offenses in the league. So we know Gus is going to get plenty of opportunity. I also found it interesting that you said you've got Gus at like RB 18 or 19, and you had J.K. Dobbins at like 17. So obviously you're not expecting much difference in terms of the usage and the potential production there. So that's, I think, good to know.
The only thing I will say is I think that J.K. Dobbins, because he's the more explosive runner, while I didn't love him because of his pass catching woes, I think his ceiling is still higher than Gus Edwards is, even as the lead back, because he's just the more explosive runner.
Yeah, I think that's fair too. And I think that's, you know, obviously that's why the Ravens were going to make Dobbins the lead back, and Edwards was kind of the 1A or 1B or however you want to describe it there in Baltimore. The Jaguars finally decided to name Trevor Lawrence their starting quarterback. Surprise, surprise. And once they did that, they took the guy who was in the quote-unquote competition with Trevor Lawrence and traded him away for a sixth-round pick. Gardner Minshew is now in Philadelphia, which was kind of a head-scratcher, I think, when everybody saw it. Like, wait, so you told us on, you know, whatever, Wednesday or Thursday that he was very much in the competition to be your starter, and now you're giving him away for, like, a bag of Skittles. Explain that to me. But now he's in Philadelphia. I mean, does this change how you feel or how you're drafting Jalen Hurts at all?
No, it doesn't, because I'm someone who had been in on Jalen Hurts. Marcus, he's in my top 10 quarterbacks. I think the upside that he brings with his legs is a top 5 fantasy quarterback. And my approach with him has been, if he is anywhere close to as good as I think he can be, this doesn't matter. He is not going to lose his job to Gardner Minshew. The one thing I will say, though, is I think it shortens his leash a little bit, because the Eagles are a team that have 2, potentially 3 first-round picks next year if Carson Wentz stays healthy this year. So that means that they have the draft capital to go out and get a quarterback next season. So I've been thinking that they need to have a full evaluation on Jalen Hurts by the end of this year. Like, they need to know if he is their guy or not. So my thinking was, what do they benefit by playing Joe Flacco over him? Like, if they're losing with Jalen Hurts, good, continue to lose with Jalen Hurts, because then it's going to help your status in the draft. But if he's playing well, you're obviously going to leave him in. But with a young quarterback like Gardner Minshew, I think if things do really get ugly, we could see a switch later in the year. But again, if Jalen Hurts plays as good as he is, as we think he can, it won't matter. And if he struggles, quarterback is the easiest position to stream off the waiver wire. So I'm cool taking that shot on Hurts still.
Right. And I think that's, for me, that's sort of where I sit right now. If he's playing well, then, you know, Minshew obviously isn't going to see the field, and you're going to feel great about Jalen Hurts as your fantasy quarterback. If he is playing that badly that Minshew's going to get on the field, you're benching him or dropping him anyway. So at this point, I think nothing for me changes about him. I'm still taking those shots. I love being able to get him, say, in the 9th round. And look, I have a couple teams where he is my primary quarterback. I do have some insurance behind him just in case, but, you know, I feel okay with that, because I think the upside, as you mentioned, is certainly there. And people, you know, when the news broke, I had a couple people ask me, like, does this worry you about Hurts? I was like, no, not really. Like, I don't think they're bringing in Gardner Minshew to be the starter. And like I said, if things get so bad that they feel like they need to put Minshew on the field, you're probably cutting ties with him in fantasy anyway. So, you know, it's interesting. I just think it's mostly Urban Meyer trying to, you know, flex a little bit when people just don't understand. Like, there was no point to flexing over Trevor Lawrence. Like, nobody believed that Lawrence was not going to win that job. Like, so why?
Yeah, like, nothing good can come. Maybe it's a non-factor, and Lawrence is fine. But literally no positive can come from giving Minshew snaps with the ones all summer and making Lawrence compete for a job that we all knew we had.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's sort of that thing works in Columbus and Gainesville and stuff like that. It's not the same in the NFL, whatever. So the Niners on Sunday went with kind of a 2-quarterback rotation. There were some plays, I think, where they had Garoppolo on the field for one play, and then the very next play, Trey Lance on the field, and they were kind of going back and forth with quarterbacks. Somebody asked Kyle Shanahan whether or not they would actually run a 2-QB rotation. And as Kyle Shanahan is wont to do, he sort of was coy about it, didn't necessarily give any insight one way or another. But at least the rumor is out there, the speculation is out there, that this is a thing the 49ers could do. We've talked about this, Florio, in terms of the Saints and Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill. We had talked about it in terms of the Patriots with Mac Jones and Cam Newton. Obviously, that's not really going to happen at this point. But is this the wave of the future, or is this just that we have a couple of, you know, maybe coaches that think outside the box that are willing to kind of play with our heads right now?
I'm hoping it's the latter for fantasy purposes, because if this is the wave of the future, man, you're going to have to start. Marcus, this is the answer for how to get quarterbacks properly drafted.
Yep.
We have the good ones be the only quarterback out there, and the other ones are in a rotation. This would be awful for fantasy, because Trey Lance is someone that we know, Marcus, many people are excited about for fantasy. But if he's in a rotation, and we saw both of the touchdowns were a rushing touchdown by each quarterback this last game, like something like that makes this so unpredictable that I don't think either Jimmy G or Trey Lance would really be trustable for fantasy purposes. So I'm hoping that this is just Kyle Shanahan doing what Kyle Shanahan has done since pre-NFL draft, where he just lies about everything and doesn't gives a bunch of half truths. But if this is the case for fantasy, I don't think either one of them are really startable.
I know that's sort of the frustrating part. I mean, I think that in the short term, it gives Trey Lance a little bit of a value boost. I mean, you know, him playing gives him more value than him not playing, but it will be incredibly frustrating if this is how it works. And you're right. If this actually were to catch on, then suddenly Patrick Mahomes in like the second or third round feels great. Like it feels, that almost feels too low. If we have a bunch of quarterback rotations and Mahomes is your workhorse quarterback, that sounds weird.
You know what's going to happen though, right, Marcus? If this is a rotation, like people are going to bench Trey Lance, and then he's going to have a game where he rushes for like 80 yards and a touchdown, and then everyone's going to get him in their lineup, and he's going to score like 3 points the next week.
Right, because the next week it'll be the Jimmy G throws for like 275 and three touchdowns sort of week. So, yeah, that's going to be miserable. So let's hope that doesn't happen. Speaking of which, I know a lot of folks are doing their fantasy drafts in the next week, probably over the weekend. We still have a whole other week of dead period before we actually get into the season. But anyway, if you are looking to dominate your fantasy leagues this season, you can check out the Fantasy Draft Spectacular presented by SundayTicket.tv. It's Adam Rank, joined by a whole host of experts. Plus, me and Florio are there too, some NFL legends, celebrities. It's a two-hour special to break down this year's top players, breakouts, rookies, sleepers, and more. You can catch out the Fantasy Draft Spectacular live today. Today being Tuesday, 5 p.m. Eastern in the NFL Fantasy app, NFL app, NFL.com, and YouTube. So by the time this is out and you're listening to it, the Fantasy Draft Spectacular might be airing in those places. And if you don't catch it live, it will be available on demand in all of those same places. Probably YouTube will be the best place to find it on demand if you want to do it there. But it's a lot of fun. I was in there. I talked rookies with Rank. Florio, I know you and Kimmy Checks did a mock draft. I think Torrey Holt is in there. I remember Warwick Dunn, I think, is another guy who stopped by to say hello. So it's a lot of fun. Check it out if you get a chance. All right. Now that we have reached the end of the preseason, I don't know what we call, what do we call this dead week? Like, because this is new. Like, we've never had this before. Like, we need a name for it, because it's not really the preseason, but it's like the, not the season. Like, can I say it's the,
yeah,
can I say it's the t- for the NFL season? Can I say that? Probably can get bleeped out, whatever. So anyway, that being said, we came up with our all hype preseason team. We each named a quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end. There were some guys that I felt like there was only really one real answer, and you will figure out who those guys are. So let's start your all preseason, or your preseason all hype team quarterback. Who is it?
It's Trey Lance, someone we were just talking about. And the rookies are really getting hyped up this year, but none more than Trey Lance. Like, you're seeing people say this guy, the minute he becomes a starter, he's like, I said, I think Justin Fields is a top 10 fantasy quarterback when he becomes a starter. People are saying Trey Lance top 7. Some are even saying he could be a top 5 fantasy quarterback as a rookie. Look, I love Trey Lance. I said I've been targeting him as my QB2 in a lot of places, but ooh, the hype, Marcus, you're a 49ers fan. You know it. The hype has not stopped for him.
It has not stopped at all. And he's my guy too. I really did. I tried to look and see if there was somebody else. And, you know, I thought, well, you know, maybe Jalen Hurts, but you know, I think the hype is sort of, you know, mellow for him. I think people have expectations. I just don't see any way around that. It's not Trey Lance, maybe Justin Fields. But even then, Matt Nagy has sort of stomped on that by repeatedly saying Andy Dalton is his starting quarterback. I mean, like, Trey Lance is going off the board in drafts before guys that we know are going to start 16 games. I mean, you know, I say what you will about Ryan Fitzpatrick. We know that he's going to be the week one starter. And as long as he doesn't, you know, blow up too much, he's going to start, I say 16, 17 games. I got to get that right. 17 games this season, as long as things don't go sideways. Same with Tua. I mean, this is the guy who's slated to be the Dolphins starter all year long. These are guys that are going after Trey Lance. And I haven't seen the top five hype. That blows my mind, because as much as I like him, that's a bridge too far for me. But I do think he's that guy.
I've seen some wild stuff on fantasy Twitter this summer.
Man, this also goes to the fact that, like, we have too much to do and too much time. Or I guess not enough to do and too much time. So then we end up with some really wild. That's going to throw me off all day. That's wild. Top five. running back, your preseason all hype running back. Who is it?
This one hurts me, Marcus, because you know I love this guy. And it's Austin Eckler. He is someone that I liked last year a lot. And I still am cool taking him as, like, you know, a fifth, sixth overall pick. But, like, you have to pay so much higher price now because everyone loves Austin Eckler. The last couple of months, I mean, you can't open up Twitter without seeing someone say something good about Austin Eckler. I mean, I've done two drafts this week alone where Austin Eckler has gone fourth overall both times to Adam Rank. I shake my fist because he knows I love him and he doesn't let me get him anywhere. But I think what's even hurt him even more, Marcus, is Austin Eckler's on Twitter now embracing fantasy football, giving away signed jerseys, hosting a fantasy show. So yep. With all that said, I think it's made Austin Eckler like an even more cool, trendy fantasy pick. And now it hurts, but if you don't have a top 7-8 pick, you might not get him. Whereas just a couple months ago, you were able to get him at the back end of the first, maybe even early second round.
Yeah, he's one that definitely, I think, that, you know, I won't say the hype's overblown because I think he's going to be really, really good this year, but it has driven up the draft price quite a bit. And I know Adam Rank has taken him a couple times just to see if he can throw you off your game. I know that's been part of his strategy, but he's one that I think a lot of folks love this year. By the way, as Florio mentioned, he really is embracing fantasy and he's doing shows. I know he's doing a show with our friend Liz Loza over at Yahoo. I've seen him on any number of different podcasts and that sort of thing. Please be kind. Please be nice, right? At some point, it is probably inevitable that Austin Eckler is going to have a bad game. He's going to have a down week. It happens to literally everybody. Do not come for him, right? Like, this is sort of a thing that we would love. We would love for more players to sort of embrace the game, embrace what we do, be a part of it, be interactive, be engaging. This is an opportunity for us as, you know, fantasy football fans to kind of, you know, maybe get a little bit of an inside peek and draw somebody else into the tent. So please don't blow this. Don't act like an ass if Austin Eckler has a bad game, because, you know, these opportunities are rare. So let's sort of embrace it for what it is and not
I'll say this, Marcus. If he is a bad game, feel free to send me all the nasty messages to someone who has hyped him up. Let's leave Austin alone and let him enjoy being in the fantasy space.
There you go. There's your outlet there. So that yeah, so now you can get those, and you can get it when the Pro Football Talk guy makes a take that makes everybody upset too.
What have I done?
Beware. So mine, mine is Najee Harris, who I think we sort of liked from the moment he got drafted, but the more we have seen him in the preseason and the more we have seen the way the Steelers plan to run their backfield situation, it just gives me reason to believe that we've seen his ADP shoot up. I'm really surprised that he hasn't crept into the back part of the first round. I'm still seeing him a lot of times kind of early second round. I really thought that by the time we got to this point in the summer, we would be talking about Najee Harris somewhere around 10, 11, 12. That hasn't quite happened yet, but I do think the hype is really, really big for him, partially because he's a new workhorse that we've sort of added to the mix. We want as many of them as we can get, and especially after last year when we saw the Steelers have to use multiple backs, whether it was James Conner, Benny Snell, a whole bunch of different guys kind of getting opportunities. This looks like it's going to be the Najee Harris show. As long as he's healthy, he is going to get a ton of work. People keep kind of mentioning Le'Veon Bell. at least in terms of maybe usage, perhaps that's what it is. They're definitely different players, but you know, we could see that kind of workload for him. And so he's the guy that I'm sort of leaning toward. I like him. I'm glad to get him in the second round, because I really did think we'd be talking about him as a first round guy by this point in the summer. Your wide receiver, who is your all hype wide receiver?
Mr. CD Lamb, another player that I have been really high on. And Marcus, I don't know if you remember back to when we were doing like way too early ranking videos in like January and February. I had CD Lamb as like my wide receiver 12, and I actually had him ahead of Amari Cooper. And people then were saying like, oh, that's a hot take stuff. Now, not only is it the norm, CD Lamb is routinely going as like a top 10 wide receiver. I'm seeing him go ahead of Allen Robinson at times. And to me, I love CD Lamb. I just can't take him over someone that I know is going to get around 150, maybe even more targets this year. Whereas Lamb still does have Cooper and Gallup there. I know the excitement, and it especially was getting a lot of hype the first like couple of weeks of training camp when this guy was going out there and making like ridiculous video game style catches every day, and it just felt like a new clip was coming out. And then we have him on Hard Knocks, which only adds to the hype. I mean, CD Lamb's hype train has not stopped at all this summer.
No, CD Lamb from the beginning. I mean, he was the guy that I think everybody was pegging to have the huge breakout season in that Dallas offense. And you're right. I mean, I feel like the first day of training camp, there was a video about him like making a stupid one-handed catch, and like the rocket ship took off. And you're right, it has not slowed down ever since then. The Hard Knocks bump is only helping or hurting, depending on how you want to look at it. You know, it's only helping that value to go up right now. I want to go Brandon Ayuk, just because I think the conversation at the beginning of the offseason, I think, was who would you rather have, Brandon Ayuk or Deebo Samuel? And then I think once the consensus sort of shifted toward Ayuk, then it became, well, okay, well, now where do you have to draft him? And it started as kind of a mid-round thing. I think it's sort of settled in the fifth round. That feels about where it's sort of stopped. But I think, you know, at first there was sort of a battle, like, are you, you know, which side are you on? Now I think everybody has sort of kind of gravitated toward Team Ayuk, and I think there's just a lot of excitement about what he can be, even with a healthy George Kittle and a healthy Deebo Samuel in that offense, what they can do with Brandon Ayuk, and how that's going to go. I'm salty when people grab him ahead of me, because I am always like trying to get him, and it feels like now it's gotten harder for me to get Brandon Ayuk in drafts because people seem to be jumping on board. So like CD Lamb and Brandon Ayuk are two receivers I'm always targeting. It's just gotten harder because more people seem to like them, and I don't like that. It's not fun.
And to give credit where it's due, Marcus, you were on Ayuk before a lot of people, so I know that's your guy. Although I will say, I got Deebo Samuel yesterday for $2 in a salary cap league.
That's
I'm
winning.
Cool taking that shot on Deebo. Ayuk went for like 20.
You know, it's funny because I think because we have gone so far towards Ayuk, it has made Deebo Samuel so undervalued now. So like maybe this is the time. I still have a few drafts left. Maybe this is the time for me to pivot to Deebo Samuel, just because like, I don't think he's going to be bad. I just like Ayuk a little bit better. But if, you know, if people are going to just, you know, neglect and ignore Deebo Samuel, then I will gladly take advantage of that. So, all right. I felt like for tight end, there's probably only one real answer. We both have the same guy. I will let you say who your preseason all hype tight end is.
Yeah, there could only be one, right? Because we know the elite tight ends are awesome. Yeah, we hype up Kelce and Waller, but we all know they're great. And then every other tight end, we basically say, why reach on any of them? They're all the same, except for the one lone unicorn. The highest rookie tight end ever drafted, Kyle Pitts. I mean, especially now that they traded Julio Jones, I feel like that only threw more fuel to the hype train fire that for Kyle Pitts. And we call him a unicorn. We say that he is going to be the best rookie tight end ever. Don't value him as a tight end. Value him more as a receiver. I mean, all that alone is stuff that we never say about any other tight end. So that alone makes him, in my opinion, the most hyped up tight end this offseason.
Yeah, he had a play over the weekend where it was kind of like a little, I won't say a screen, but like, you know, they got it out to him on the sideline, and he just took off like a shot and picked up a huge chunk of yards. And that was, you know, you saw a whole lot of eyeball emojis associated with that play, and you're right. I mean, the I would say we've set the bar at the moon, but that's probably too low. Like, I feel like we have set the bar arbitrarily somewhere like around Saturn with him, and the expectations are super high. I still am nervous about drafting him where you have to get him, just because you are drafting him, I think, at his absolute ceiling. And so for that reason, I don't have a whole lot of Kyle Pitts. It just makes me really nervous. But I do concede that, you know, the opportunity is there. The possibility of him reaching that is certainly there. And I do think this time next year, we will be talking about him among the elites. I mean, it will be, I think it will go from the big three to the big four next year with Kyle Pitts joining that group. And so I'm very curious to see him play this year. And you're right. No Julio Jones certainly opens some things up. It makes him very, very, very interesting to watch come this season. All right. So those are our all hype guys. Next, I had the our guys, the guys that you have to feel like you want in every single draft. So we each pick three. Who are the three guys that you feel like you need to walk away with every time you do a draft?
For me, a lot of it comes down to draft strategy. I'm getting RBs early, which means I need to fill wide receivers in the middle round. So I am shooting for wide receivers that I think have the upside of greatly exceeding their draft costs. Jerry Jeudy is my guy. He is one of them. Mike Williams is another, and then Marvin Jones Jr. I think all three could outlive their ADP. Jerry Jeudy is coming with a lot more hype now. We all know why he's great. I was speaking up on him last podcast as well. But with Mike Williams, I think that he could be in for a career year. We've seen him post a 1,000-yard season. We've seen him have double-digit touchdowns in his season. We just need him to put it together. And I think with this new offensive coordinator saying he's going to play the X in the Saints system. And then, to me, the biggest thing is Justin Herbert, right? Like, he is Williams finally has a strong arm quarterback that could take advantage of his downfield skills. No offense to Phillip Rivers. That is just not a strength of his like it is for Herbert. And then with Marvin Jones Jr., I think that he could lead this team in yards and touchdowns. I mean, Marcus, he has been a top 30 wide receiver in points per game 4 years in a row and has at least 9 touchdowns in the three of the last 4 years that he has stayed healthy. And you get him after Chenault and after DJ Chark. So I love waiting until like the 9th, 10th round and getting Marvin Jones Jr.
Yeah, I've really kind of, you know, started to pick up Marvin Jones in a lot more spaces just because of that. Like, and I love Chenault. I'm certainly not ashamed to say how much I'm a fan of LaVisca Chenault. But everything we saw so far this preseason suggests that Jones is going to get a ton of targets. He might end up getting maybe the most targets on this team. And right now, you're right, he's coming off the board really, really late. Also in an offense that's going to be throwing the ball a lot. I mean, you know, the Jaguars are going to be losing a lot of games. Trevor Lawrence is probably going to throw the football a lot. And I think, you know, now with Travis Etienne, unfortunately, out for the season, a lot of those easy targets are sort of gone. And so maybe that means some more downfield throws to Marvin Jones. That'll be interesting. Also, like the Mike Williams thing, I really think an interesting sort of stack is maybe a Justin Herbert, Mike Williams stack. I know the targets aren't going to be there on the same level as for Keenan Allen or Austin Eckler. But I think, you know, the big playability and maybe the touchdown upside for Mike Williams makes it kind of an interesting stack to put together. It's probably easier to get than an Allen Herbert stack is the other part of it, too. My three guys, Gus Edwards, who we talked about earlier, that gets a little bit harder, obviously, now with the ADP going up. If he's still there in the 5th round, though, I still think it's worth the shot just because he is the lead running back in what is probably going to be the run heaviest offense in the league. And so I think it's worth trying to get a shot at him. It was especially great when, you know, you were still able to get him in like the 9th or 10th round. But even now, I still want to try to get Gus Edwards as many places as I can. Jalen Hurts, another one. You know, he's got that upside, but he's still sort of going a little bit later in drafts. You're definitely not having to draft him where you're going after a Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson, even, you know, a Justin Herbert, somebody like that. You can still wait a little bit longer. Get a Jalen Hurts, get that upside, and if you don't feel confident, just go and draft a second quarterback later on in the draft and just have that insurance just in case things don't work out as planned with Hurts. But I think the right now the risk in drafts is a lot less than what the potential reward is if he plays the way we think he can play in 2021. And then my third one is Amon-Ra St. Brown. I have said it all offseason long how much I'm excited about what he can do and what his place is going to be, excuse me, in this Detroit offense. That only gets bigger, I think. Breshad Perriman got released. It's, you know, the Lions decided pretty early that, that was not going to be the answer, so they let him go. And this just seems to solidify St. Brown as the number two target behind TJ Hawkinson in that offense. And again, an offense that might not be super great, but they're going to be throwing the ball a lot. They're going to be playing from behind. And if he can be sort of Cooper Kupp 2.0 or Cooper Kupp light even, there's a lot of targets coming for Amon-Ra St. Brown. And the draft capital, I mean, it's next to nothing. You could probably wait till the 13th, 14th round and get Amon-Ra St. Brown and, you know, and prosper, hopefully. That's the plan.
I'm all about that pick, Marcus. I like St. Brown a lot. And I'm not one buying into this preseason narrative that the Lions' three receiver set is going to be Williams, Cephas, and Khalif Raymond. Like, I think Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to be in at the very least on three wide receiver sets as the slot receiver. And I agree with what you said. I think that he could be like a poor man's Cooper Kupp for Jared Goff in this offense.
Yeah, I think so. It'll be interesting. His brother is a free agent now. Equanimeous got released by the Packers this morning. So maybe there could be a St. Brown reunion in Detroit. Who knows?
They have a younger brother in college still.
Osiris.
They are one of the most interesting. They have to be the most interesting family, not just in football, maybe in all of sports.
Yeah, Osiris is a receiver at Stanford, I believe. And yeah, he's still in college. Yeah, the thing that always amuses me about them is that the kids are all named Saint Brown, but their parents are just Brown. The parents added the Saint part, I guess, to give it a little more panache. I'm not really sure.
Their dad, I had to look stuff up about him, and their dad said that he didn't believe that his kids were like ordinary, so they didn't deserve ordinary names, and that's why they all have like the names that they do, which is they speak German. They lived in Germany for a bit. Their dad was like a powerlifting champion.
Yeah, he's like Mr. Universe or something. Yeah,
yeah, they have a really interesting backstory.
Yeah,
they're like the Ball brothers of the NFL, just not as in your face.
Right, exactly. yeah, it's funny because they all have very unique names, but their parents are John and Miriam. So, John Brown, right?
Like, the most generic name.
Such a common name, just John Brown.
He's literally an NFL player with that name.
Exactly. Not a bad. I feel like we haven't talked about John Brown. Like, have you drafted him? Do you have any interest in John Brown? And this is random.
I did until Gruden's lately has kind of been saying like he's struggling to crack the starting lineup. Then I've kind of soured on him because I still think they have incentive to get Henry Ruggs involved. Yeah. And Bryan Edwards seems to be in really high standing with them there. So I wouldn't be surprised if Brown is kind of a backup option to those two.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Yeah, I like John Brown. It's just, you know, just really since he left Arizona, it's been hard for him to stay healthy and just be as productive as he was early in his career. All right. We got Madden codes. I announced that last week. I asked for folks to, you know, give us a 5-star review, you know, screenshot it, send it to us and let us know what system you're playing for. So I've got 3 right here. And you know what? Let's just keep it real. I got 3. We have 2 codes. We'll see if we can wrangle a third, and we'll crown 3 winners. That seems fair. That seems fair, right?
Seems good to me.
All right, cool. So let's read the three here that I like the most. This one from Kevin Tata. I'm not sure. If I mispronounce your name, I apologize, Kevin. But 5-star review says best fantasy podcast. This podcast has kept me fantasy relevant in all of my leagues for over 5 years. The only season I didn't make the playoffs was the year I couldn't listen and study fantasy football because I was going through Army boot camp and job training. Thank you for your service. Glad to get back to the podcast. Also still miss Rank, Co, and Gelhar, though. Yeah. Well, I mean, Rank we still have around, and he still shows up every once in a while. But Co and Gelhar, yeah, miss those guys. We still talk all the time. But yeah, that was a good time. So thanks, Kevin. We will get you your code and appreciate you listening for all these years, and best of luck this year. This one from J Doza 88 on Twitter. Best fantasy show ever. What's not to love about these guys? Kimmy checks the most beautiful woman who knows her football. And I mean that with the most respect. Her and her husband make a beautiful couple. Nice save. Michael F. Florio is the man. He knows his sports and gets some, and he's got some style. Marcus Grant, my guy, is talent. All the advice he gives is 100. Adam Rank, who can't love this man? Funny, funny guy and a football guru. I mean, flattery always works. So
that was so my personal favorite. Just
yeah, so. Absolutely. Flattery goes a long way in this one, which gets us to the one that I think I liked the mostest. this one from Jacob Brummel. It says, dodging players like Neo in the Matrix. Thanks to MG, my guy Marcus Grant, for years I've had a better insight on which players to dodge, just like Neo in the Matrix and Marcus dodging the Delta variant. This podcast will have you realizing just how little you know about fantasy football and how badly you need help on a weekly basis. If you don't listen to the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast, you're essentially a one-legged duck that swims in circles. Don't be a one-legged duck that swims in circles. I appreciate that he listens all the way to the end. And remember some of the goofy things that I throw in at the end of the podcast. So congrats to all three of you, Kevin, Jacob, and Jay Doza. We will reach out to you and get you some codes as soon as possible. So enjoy. Congratulations. And for everybody else, appreciate you playing. Appreciate you listening as well, which I guess feels like a good spot to sign off and close this thing up. That is it. We are done. We appreciate you hanging out with the NFL Fantasy Football Show. You know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, what happens if you take no dose and wash it down with NyQuil? Be safe, take care of yourselves, get vaccinated, and we will see you on Thursday.